Welcome to this Happy Home podcast. I'm Arlene Pellicane. Have you exchanged crosswords with your child already today? Wondered why your husband was blaming you for something that was really his responsibility? Help is on the way with counselor and author Dr. Laurel Shaler. You know, our relationships can bring us so much joy, but they can also cause a lot of frustration if we are not communicating clearly. Well, today's podcast guest is here to help us, Dr. Laurel Shaler, and she's going to share practical help from her latest book called Relational Reset, Unlearning the Habits That Hold You Back. Dr. Shaler is a counselor, licensed social worker, and the associate professor at Liberty University, where she serves as the director of the Master of Arts Program in Professional Counseling. She and her husband have one daughter and live in South Carolina. Let's get started. You might think of this as a free counseling session. The doctor is in, Dr. Laurel Shaler. Laurel, there are so many ways that we communicate, and sometimes we communicate well with our families and other times not so much. So one of the things I hear a lot is about aggression, and it's usually us mothers who are either yelling at our children or maybe we're yelling at our spouses. We raise our voice, we yell, we get close to the person, we, you know, wag our finger in their face, we stand with our arms crossed. So all that harshness, that aggression that happens, tell me, what are like the negative effects?
Right. So when we're aggressive, we're really forceful in our communication. So you gave some excellent examples, but when we raise our voice and yell at others, when we get up close to the person and maybe we wag our fingers in their face or stand with our arms crossed or our hands on our hips, or we just speak really harshly to them with our tone of voice or with the words that we use, we are telling them, we're communicating with them that what we have to say and what we believe and what we think is more important than them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it may be true that our message is quote unquote right, but ultimately we're telling them that they are not worth it. They're not worth us taking our time and being patient and assertive and listening and communicating in a way that might be more productive. So instead, we're just telling them that they have to listen to us because they don't matter and what they have to say doesn't matter. And ultimately, that really can harm our relationship.
How can a person retrain themselves? Like if they're listening to this and they think, you know what, I'm going to do better tomorrow. But then tomorrow comes and goes and they're like, oh, I did it again. I lost my temper again. How can someone retrain themselves to be less aggressive with their children, with their husband?
Yeah, and I've heard that so many times. I'm thinking of a client that I had that expressed that exact same sentiment, that over and over she was finding that she was being aggressive with her young children and she would feel so guilty and she would cry. And one thing I really appreciated about her is that she would repent in front of them and also ask for their forgiveness. So she was on the right path as far as those things go. And I definitely encourage those things as well. But the issue is that she just kept repeating that same pattern. So part of this is learning to get out of that same pattern, that go-to habit where we just instantly react. And sometimes that takes a lot of hard work, but we can, through prayer and with the Lord's help, we can take that pause. We can take that break. We can start to be honest and direct and communicate clearly without becoming aggressive. And one of the things that some of the moms might really relate to, I know that I do, is this idea of taking a personal time out. We think of timeouts as just being for young children, but we adults can take timeouts too.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe our children can send us to timeout when they think we need it.
Sometimes that might be necessary.
So what would this timeout look like? So if I thought, okay, I'm a little too hot, you know, under the collar right now, I need a timeout. What would I do during this timeout?
Well, even before you call a timeout, I would say make sure that you talk with the people especially in your household, about what that might look like so that they understand that like that means that you're taking a break so that the kids don't need to follow mom into the bedroom or the bathroom and bang on the door and mommy, we just want to be with you. So there needs to be a plan for what the children are going to do during that time as well. And sometimes they're too young to be left alone. So you really have to think about what this is going to look like. Mm-hmm. But when you can take a timeout, it's an opportunity to get alone by yourself. Maybe it's a time for prayer. Maybe it's a time for breathing, a time for journaling, taking a walk, just doing some artwork. I love those coloring books, you know, even for adults, or you can just pick up one of your kids' coloring books. Do something creative. Read, just get all of that frustration out of you and just take some time to be able to reflect on what has happened and what you want the next step to be. I think of a timeout kind of like, I'm not huge into sports, but it's kind of like a timeout for a sporting event where, you know, they realize that they need to take a break and they need to collect themselves and calm down and get some water and regroup and make a plan and get back in the game. And that's exactly what we can do too.
I love that, because you just go, 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 and you just keep making all these mistakes because you never took the time out to redirect and to say, okay, we've got to stop. We've got to, let me get a plan. You have in your book something about breathing retraining and about like a kind of a three-step process to breathing. And I really like it. Can you, it's very simple, very doable. Can you explain that?
Sure. So breathing retraining, it is so much easier than maybe we think. And it's not so much about counting to 1 to 10, or you could do that if you wanted to, but ultimately breathing retraining is simple. It's taking a deep breath through your nose, holding your breath to the count of three. And as you let the breath out through your mouth, think of a calming word. Some examples that I give are relax, peace, Jesus. Sometimes that's all we can say. And truthfully, it's always the best thing that we can say when we mean it sincerely, that we're just calling out to Jesus to help us to learn to calm down, help us to, you know, catch our breath and to just focus on him and what he would have for us to do next. It's simple, really simple is 1, 2, 3.
I love that. And that third step is just keep repeating it until you feel calmer. And I think that is fabulous. So we've talked a little bit about aggressive, about, you know, the yeller. Now there's also the passive aggressive. Explain what that person does.
Yes. So passive aggressive can really be the most problematic type of communication style. And it's also a bit challenging to identify, but truly it's when we're sending mixed messages. So like on the surface, we might seem to be agreeable, but on the other hand, we're indicating that something is wrong. Mm-hmm. So I give this example of like a girlfriend and a boyfriend getting into a fight via text. And after a few rounds of the fight, the girlfriend finally just writes back and says, "No worries. By the way, I'll return your necklace tomorrow. Good night."
Right.
And so the boyfriend's left like, wait a minute, what's going on?
Right.
How did we go from a conflict to you telling me don't worry about it and you're going to return my necklace? Like, are you breaking up with me? What's going on here? So it's where we just have a mixed message going on and we're just not communicating clearly. So that's also can be really harmful for our relationships. And again, the best type of communication is by being assertive.
Mm-hmm. So let's say you have a spouse and they're like, oh, it's fine, don't worry. And you know, no, I'm sure my spouse doesn't feel that way. What's that next thing that you say to them to draw out your spouse to say like, you know, don't go under this passive aggressive little rock. Tell me what's really bothering you.
Right. Well, actually, I like the way of what you just said, because I think that's assertive and fair. Yeah. But, you know, I think just being able to communicate, you know, look, if you don't want to talk about this right now, I'm fine for us to not talk about it. But at some point, I do hope that we can return to this conversation, because obviously it's not fine with you. And obviously you are concerned about it. So let's come back and talk about it at a later time. I think sometimes we just have to realize when we've gotten too far into that disagreement and stop ourselves sooner and to be able to say, okay, let's not go here. Let's not argue. Let's not fight. Let's try and just take a break from this and, you know, regroup and come back to this discussion later.
You were talking about that boyfriend and girlfriend and communicating via text. And of course, more and more people are doing that. And younger people, it's their preferred way of communicating to each other. But why, you know, texting is great for like, are you here yet? Or, you know, I'm standing under door B, please come pick me up. You know, that's great. But it's not good for like communicating. You know, why should we pause before thinking, oh, let me send this message via text? You know, what should make us not use a text for certain things?
Yeah, well, you know, it can be tempting to text because it's easy and, you know, it's quick and we just think, oh, I'll just go ahead and get this out of the way. But the problem is sometimes this can turn into a nasty back and forth. And it can be really easy to misunderstand written communication. You don't get to hear the sender's tone of voice. You don't get to see the other person's facial expression or body language. There's an old saying, you know, write it, regret it. So we can be tempted to text or to email when really it's something that we need to have a face-to-face or at least voice-to-voice conversation about. Something that I think is helpful is to consider how your words might be taken, like if other people were to read it. And sometimes that's the case. So when that happens, you know, it can be really embarrassing if we haven't treated the other person really in a way that we would want to be treated.
Yeah. And, you know, along those lines, what kind of tech boundaries do you think, you know, in this digital world, you know, to protect our relationships, what are a few tech boundaries that you think are sound?
Well, I think one thing is to just establish margin, like set some parameters around when you will and when you won't communicate with people through technology, and try not to give in. Sometimes the pressure comes from other people, but sometimes it comes from within ourselves. Like we just think, oh, I'll just check my email one more time before I go to bed. Right. But that can be really problematic. You know, I'm a professor and I can think of times where I've said that and then I've read something from a student and I'm like, oh, I can't not respond to this. So then I'm up, you know, researching and reading and having to reply when it's late at night and I shouldn't be doing it. And really when other people aren't getting our best, because when we're tired, nobody is going to get our best.
Right.
So it's just, you know, having healthy boundaries that can really help us have healthy relationships. And then also just really being cautious not to over communicate. I think I first learned about this word in a Beth Moore book, but this reality of just kind of going on and on with someone, like we don't hear back from them. And so we text again and we text again. Mm. And we've convinced ourselves that they're angry or upset with us. And finally they text back and say, I'm so sorry, I missed your last 12 texts. I have a child that's been throwing up for the last 6 hours.
Right.
Whatever, you know, so it's like, we think that it's about us and usually it's not. Mm-hmm. So it really can damage the relationship because it can leave people feeling like intruded upon or even just annoyed. So we just want to be careful about that.
Absolutely. There was one story in your book that I liked so much about how we can blame one another. And it was in the context of a husband who, you know, he's constantly late for work and all this. And so he sets his alarm, but he sleeps through it. And his wife helps him, you know, get up, it's time to work. But, you know, he didn't ask for that help. It's not expected per se. So one day she doesn't do it because she's out on a walk and she comes home and he's like, why didn't you wake me up? You know, after she wakes him up, I'm going to be late for work. It's your fault. And then he stews all day and he comes home mad because you ruined my day because I was late for work and you didn't wake me up. And the wife's like, that's not my job, you know? And I think right. So many times we're like doing someone else's job and we're frustrated. So kind of help that woman step back and say, you know what, how can I help my husband take responsibility for his own stuff?
Yeah, and I think this really kind of links back with this idea of being assertive, of being able to say, you know, I understand that it's been helpful to you to have me help wake you up and get you up and out the door. And most of the time I'm happy to do that. But sometimes I need some time and some space in the mornings myself. And it's not my responsibility to make sure that you're up. So in the future, if you need my help on a specific morning, I'd appreciate if you would let me know and I can prepare for that morning. Otherwise, I just ask that you not expect that I'm available to do that every single day. I think part of it is just setting up the expectations and again, setting those boundaries so that the other person is clear on where they end and where you begin. You know, one of my favorite verses, my wedding verse with my husband is Ephesians 5:31, which is, you know, a quote from where Jesus said, the two shall become one. So yes, we become one, but we don't necessarily have to be responsible for making sure the other person gets to work on time every day.
Right, exactly. I like that very much. What if it's the other side, where we are not taking responsibility? Well, it's the kid's fault and it's my husband's fault. And if he would only be more romantic, I would be nicer, you know, and if they would only get good grades, I wouldn't have to nag them so much, you know, and we are blaming others for, you know, the things we're not taking responsibility. What are the ways we can look in the mirror and realize, oop, I really need to take responsibility for this?
Yeah, it can be a real struggle to be willing to take responsibility and own our own flaws or our weaknesses or areas that we need to improve. But I think we'll find that our relationships are better, they're stronger when we're not blaming other people for everything that goes wrong in our life. I always think about, you know, when I used to teach anger management groups or facilitate anger management groups, I would say, you know, who is holding you down and telling you, if you don't get angry, then I'm going to punch you. You know, that doesn't happen for most of us. Like, it's up to us to decide how we're going to react to things, how we're going to behave, the choices that we make. We get to make those decisions. And if we make a decision that is not in our best interest or it's not in the best interest of others, instead of blaming others or making it out to be that other people, that it's their fault and it's not our fault, then it doesn't look good on us. There's a real, you know, element of immaturity there when we can't admit I was wrong and I'm sorry and I need to do better in this area. But when we can admit that, you know, our relationships can really thrive.
Now, you see a lot of clients, and you talk about that there's like a miracle question that you can ask, that you ask these clients to help them kind of get their past in the right perspective. What is that miracle question?
The miracle question is used by a lot of therapists, especially those who practice something called solution-focused therapy. And so here's the question. If you went to sleep tonight and you woke up to find a miracle had taken place and your world is now exactly as you want it to be, all your problems solved, what would be different in your life? Yeah. How would you know you had received a miracle? And what I think is so fascinating is I've asked this question many, many times over. And I think sometimes we think that people would come up with some outlandish answer, like, you know, maybe they're waking up as a millionaire, or they're waking up on an exotic island, or, you know, whatever the case may be, something extreme. But that's not what I heard. You know, I heard responses like these, like, I would know I received a miracle because my husband would treat me like he did when we were first married. I would know I had received a miracle because my boss wouldn't be criticizing my work, or because my children would be listening to me, or because the sibling I hadn't talked to in years would have contacted me. It's so much of these miracles really are relationship oriented, and they're things that are possible. Now, sometimes we have to accept that we can't control other people. So if we have a sibling and we've tried to reconcile and we've tried to communicate and we've, you know, done everything that we can, sometimes we have to accept that the ball is in their court, so to speak. But in other areas, sometimes this takes a shift in ourselves. Like, maybe we realize, oh, I've wanted my sibling to contact me, but I haven't done my part. I haven't picked up the phone either. I haven't reached out to them. I haven't apologized for the, you know, wronging them like I did. Right. Or maybe with a boss, you know, we realize, well, I haven't gone in and talked with them about their concerns, or I just sit there and take it when they criticize me in the staff meetings, and I don't go and talk with them and express my concern and ask for clarification on how I can improve my work. So, you know, then we can begin the process of unpacking what's really going on and trying to help them make some changes. But like the old Serenity Prayer says, to accept the things you can't change, to change the things you can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Well, I'm so grateful for Dr. Laurel Shaler and her insights. And if you need more help in your relationships, I strongly recommend her book, Relational Reset: Unlearning the Habits That Hold You Back, by Moody Publishers. Chapters include Dismiss Blame, Forget Fear, and Overcome Offenses. You know, there are many real-world examples in the book that you will for sure relate to. There's scripts that you can try with your loved ones. It's a very practical and biblical book. Thank you so much for listening to this month's Happy Home Podcast. Take a moment to review it on iTunes and share it with a friend that may need help in this area. And next time, I will be joined by Valerie Warner, who's going to come to talk about her newest book. Until next time, remember, you too can have a happy home.